Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Everybody, what's up, and welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, the last Thursday of the year in which we will not have football, unless there's, you know, that one at the very end of the year, but maybe that'll be in 2022 already. I don't know. The point is, we're a week away from the start of the season, and we are very excited here at the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Michael Beller, Jake Seeley, and Brandon Funston with you guys. We talked about this earlier in the week on Monday, some drafts coming up. Jake, have you had any drafts between then and now?
No, I told you, I said it on the last show, and Brandon asked me the same question. I told you nobody listens to me. I said, no, I'm done. I don't have any drafts for the last week of the season any year because we don't have time for it. I don't know how you guys have time for it.
You've got to make time. Completely. I totally missed that on Monday that you're done completely. You still have, you had one last night, Brandon, right?
I had one last night, one of my two, local leagues that we do live drafts. So yeah, it was... We have no shot clock on that one, so that one went about 3.5 hours for a normal snake draft. So,
I wouldn't have done that here.
Yeah. And then we got one on Monday. We always do one on Labor Day. We golf in the morning, and then we draft at a conference room at the golf, at the golf course afterwards. So that's
fancy.
Great. Yeah, it's good times.
Very fancy, very nice. I've got one of those on Saturday, Brandon, in-person long time, long standing, good friends league, no shot clock. It typically takes us like 4 to 4.5 hours. So, we're having fun. We're getting together. The draft is, just being hanging out and having the day together.
I can see Saturday.
Labor
Day. That's not what I want to do on Labor Day. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, like that. We're too busy. We're too busy doing stuff for the articles and the season and stuff like that. So maybe the Saturday. I'll give you a pass for Saturday. Funston, on
Thank
Monday,
you very
you're
much.
Drunk.
Yeah, we are because this is already at 10 a.m. Central Time. This is my third podcast of the day, so I think I would have trouble doing that on a weekday. But Saturday, that's a day for a draft, and today, Thursday, a day for the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. And here's what we're going to do for you today. We've done basically everything. We've talked through the preseason news. You know who we like. You know our sleepers, our busts, our breakouts, guys like that. So today, 1 week out from the start of the season, we are going to give you bold predictions across the fantasy football landscape. We got 5 apiece coming from each of us. We'll talk about them. We'll make fun of each other. We'll have some fun with them, and then we'll get out of here. I'm going to start with what was my favorite. When I asked Jake and Brandon for these predictions yesterday, and they sent them along, and some of them made me really happy. And Jake, they made me happy and not happy because, Jake, you actually took two guys who I wanted to have predictions about, but I defer to my co-hosts. I let you guys have first crack at it, and then I fill in the blanks elsewhere. And so the one that really made me smile, coming from Jake, Rondale Moore, a top 25 wide receiver and the best rookie wide receiver. I mean, I'm there with you. I don't even need to hear the case, but let's hear the case, Jake.
Well, let's be clear about some things because, it's bold predictions and everybody has bold predictions on sites everywhere. So, we could just throw out stuff. I could be like, Rondale Moore's a top 5 wide receiver. Done. We want to get some context behind
it. That would be
bold. I like to call them bold, but somewhat believable, right?
Well,
bold and believable.
Believable, but also the context of how it happens. Obviously, Rondale Moore being a top 25 wide receiver is not within the most likely of outcomes, but this is how it happens, is what we've already seen so far, is that AJ Green does look like he's past his prime. He doesn't look like pre-injury AJ Green. A lot of people are speculating whether or not he had given up and just didn't want to play for the Bengals anymore. He doesn't look that great so far. You also look at the fact that Christian Kirk hasn't been able to stay healthy. And then if AJ Green's not on the field, where has Kirk been playing? Back outside where he doesn't succeed as well. And Rondale Moore is getting those slot options. Also, if you look at, let's just say talent of Moore versus Kirk versus AJ Green. Obviously, if AJ Green was at his prime, I would take AJ Green over him period, not even close. But if you're telling me today who looks the best, it's Rondell Moore, and they're trying to manufacture touches for him. So this is how it happens, is he steps into the scenario where he is already the number two, day one for the Cardinals. And in that case, if you look at the rest of Ja'Marr Chase possibly being the number three to start the season, you go down the list, Devontae Smith we still like, but Devontae Smith is battling with Jalen Reagor, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz for options. So no wide receiver really hits the top 30 except for Rondell Moore, because he's in a great offense and a great situation, and his talent wins out. I like all these rookie wide receivers to varying degrees, but this is how he ends up being the best rookie wide receiver.
It's definitely a plausible path, right? I mean, it certainly is, especially with what this Arizona offense is. Brandon, you can take this away.
No, I mean, I think, you know, when we get to Mai, it's kind of the same deal. There has to be some, you know, some things, some dominoes that fall that make it happen. But, you know, look, you could see their kind of intentions with him is to just manufacture ways to get him the ball all the time. I mean, it's just you get that feeling. It's almost palpable that he's at the forefront of their mind in this offense, that we are going to make sure that Rondell Moore gets his touches. So I think they're going to be pressing that issue for a while is the way I feel about that. So we'll see how that plays out. But I worry most about his health, you know, because he hasn't been a guy that's been able to stay healthy. But if he stays healthy, should be a fun ride.
Brandon, you've got a rookie wide receiver prediction as well, a top rookie wide receiver. Again, it's a deep class, and neither of the guys you're going for were guys who were selected toward the top of the draft. That's what makes these bold but believable. Who you got, Brandon?
Yeah, and you know, fantasy value of rookie receivers doesn't always go in the order in which they were selected in the NFL draft. I mean, Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy are, you know, they're kind of representative of that, when you had Chase Claypool and Justin Jefferson, you know, being the top guys last year. I think, you know, the way it stands right now, this is a Carolina offense, and Terrace Marshall is my guy that I'm talking about here. Terrace Marshall is the number three wide receiver there. Yes, Curtis Samuel was a top 25 receiver last year with Teddy Bridgewater. I still think that probably what has to happen is there needs to be a little bit of an injury with Christian McCaffrey back. He's going to demand more touches as well. I think if, you know, Robbie Anderson or DJ Moore is out for any period of time, I think Terrace Marshall can really step up, and it might just be like he doesn't look back at a certain point, because I love the talent, and even if he is the number three, I think he's still going to have fantasy viability. But if anybody were to kind of fall in front of him, I think it's just takeoff time for Terrace.
Yes, and I
think there's good reason to believe in that offense too.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Well, so we're also trusting that Sam Darnold can be at least Teddy Bridgewater, which is conceivable. But I think this is similar, but not quite as. And I'm not trying to poo-poo on Brandon's, because these are bold predictions. But like the difference of like why I don't.
Yeah. I know he did it. You know what you did, Jake.
I know I did it on purpose. I was seeing if he was going to say anything. But no, I actually do want to print it out and actually dump on it. Just so I can do that. But really, what it comes down to is, I do think this is intriguing. I think it definitely involves an injury. And that's where, like, I would go with Moore over Marshall for my scenario, is because I don't need an injury, because I think we've already got that in front of us of, the opportunity is already there. I agree with Brandon. Like, if an injury happens, sure, but it's mostly like Christian McCaffrey's already back. So at best case scenario, he becomes the number two and takes over DJ Moore, or maybe DJ Moore's the one that get hurt. But I would love to see it happen. I'm a huge Terrace Marshall guy. I said in the draft process that he's one of the most innately gifted wide receivers in this draft class. He just is lazy because he was so much better than everybody else in college, and he kind of let people get on top of him. But the talent is definitively there. I snatched him up in a lot of stash keeper dynasty drafts just because of the talent alone.
Before we get to a wide receiver prediction from me, let's get to a question from Sam Frieder watching us on YouTube. Better late round flyer, Rondale Moore or Brian Edwards? What say you, Jake?
Both. I really like, no, I'm saying, like, where you're taking him, you could take Edwards and then Moore, or depending on who you are when you're draft, because Moore is getting a little bit more like the helium right now. Maybe you go more than Edwards. But if I had to pick one, I probably slightly lean Edwards, just because he doesn't need, like, he's right now, he is the one and two with Henry Ruggs. Rondell Moore, if AJ Green is healthy, if Christian Kirk is healthy, is like, that's what I was talking about with my actually downplaying my pick a little bit, is that there's still a lot of more, there's more options in Arizona than there are in Las Vegas. I almost said Oakland.
Brandon?
Oh, you want me to weigh in on that? I'm going Rondale Moore. I just, there's been a lot of talk about Bryan Edwards. He did nothing his rookie season. I'm just out on the Raiders receivers. I will believe it when I see it with those guys. I more believe in Rondale Moore for the reasons I talked about, that they're going to go out of their way to get him the ball. I don't know that Derek Carr, I think Derek Carr is in love with Darren Waller, and I don't know that. Just a lot of talk and hyperbole about Bryan Edwards' talent and comparing him to like T.O. and all the stuff that's come out. We're talking about a guy
there, but 75. You still have 75% of his attempts have to go somewhere that isn't Darren Waller.
I just have this feeling of deja vu with Bryan Edwards because he got a little bit of sleep. I got a little bit of sleeper love last year, and then he was a complete non-factor. And now we're getting the kind of the same thing. It's even more, and this will be the year. And he's getting the preseason and all that. And I just am like, I just don't think Derek Carr's in love with throwing to those guys.
Why does Brandon hate Bryan Edwards?
Yeah.
We're going to have a five-part examination leading into week one. Why does Brandon hate Bryan Edwards on this show? I'm going to throw out a wide receiver prediction. It's not a rookie. It is someone who we didn't see a ton of last year at the NFL level, however, and it's Courtland Sutton. And I think Courtland Sutton gets back to those 2019 ways and ultimately is a wide receiver one this season. Not drafting him as a wide receiver one. You certainly don't have to. Just because I think he can get there doesn't mean I'm taking him as a top 12 wide receiver. That would be bad drafting. But, you know, remember what he did in 2019 with some pretty poor quarterback play in Denver. 72 catches, 1,112 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Now, there's a much higher floor of quarterback competency in a Teddy Bridgewater as the starter for the Broncos, and I think that Courtland Sutton just picks up where he left off, and if I had any qualms about him, they were completely eased by what he did in that final preseason game. We talked about it earlier this week. Obviously, it wasn't huge numbers, but that doesn't matter. He was out there. He was doing everything we would expect from him. He was cutting on his knee. He looked healthy, and he looked like a guy who was totally confident in his knee and totally confident in his health. So I think he is the wide receiver one on that team, like Jerry Jeudy as well. We'll have Jerry Jeudy on teams, but I think Sutton is the number one option in that offense, in that passing game, and that he can get back to those ways in 2019, a little bit better quarterback play, punch his way into the top 12 at this position. So Courtland Sutton, for me, wide receiver one type of material. That is bold prediction number one from me. We're going to move right on to our second. We've got a group of running back predictions here. All three of us liking or maybe not liking so much some of these running backs. And, you know, this show, dating back to last year, has had Austin Eckler and Aaron Jones almost at loggerheads with one another. I think all three of us like both of those guys this year. But Jake, you've got an Eckler prediction. Brandon, you've got an Aaron Jones prediction. Let's hear yours, Jake. And just for the record, I wanted to make this exact prediction, and then you made it. So I am 100% on board with you.
With Austin Eckler being a top five running back. Yeah, this is very, 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 very simple. The easiest way this happens is he's already gotten close. And just give him an Alvin Kamara workload in the rushing department, which is just an extra 25 to 35 carries. You give him extra 25, 35 carries, just as Alvin Kamara got that boost from his rookie season to his second season. And now you're talking about potentially finishing like Alvin Kamara did as RB2 or 3. So it just comes down to, does the new regime, now that Anthony Lynn is gone, do they give him that workload? That's all it is. If he gets that workload, boom, done. This is one of the easiest top fives there can be. If he's only who he has been, and it's 120 carries and the workload he gets in the passing game, oh, boo-hoo, he's still a top 10 running back. So the floor is great, and the top five is more than doable.
Yeah, don't disagree with that. The reason why he might not end up in the top five, though, is because of Aaron Jones beating him to it. Aaron Jones has already been top five the last 2 years, and I think Jones is positioned for his best year yet. I would not be surprised if he finishes. I could be as bold as to say he finishes as the number one running back. They're paying him. He got paid. Jamal Williams is gone. My prediction is 65 catches. His previous high was 49. I'm basically only assuming that he kind of absorbs half of what Jamal Williams did in the passing game. I think it could be more than that. They've been a top eight team in terms of throwing the ball to the running backs, running back receptions. Aaron Jones is really good at it. So I think that's going to be a huge part of his value this year. And a lot of people want to talk about A.J. Dillon maybe taking goal line carries. Aaron Jones has been one of the most efficient runners inside the 5-yard line in the NFL over the last couple of years. So I don't think that's going to be a big thing. A.J. Dillon will play, you know, a big part of what Jamal Williams' role was, but not in the passing game is my bet.
Yeah, I love this prediction. I love both of these predictions. Aaron Jones, Austin Ekeler are guys that I am targeting very strongly in every single draft. I want one of these guys on my team. I'll take both of these guys on my team. I love both of these guys. They are both inside my top. Actually, that's not true. Ekeler I have as my number 6 running back, even though I could see him being easily, obviously, a top 5 back. So they're both inside my top 6. Aaron Jones comfortably so, and I think Aaron Jones should be viewed as a top 3 running back. I have him 3rd on the board right now. And so what does that mean? Where do I go with this? I'm going to take things a little bit negative, you guys. Give me Derrick Henry not a top 5 running back this season. It's because of guys like Aaron Jones and Austin Ekeler. They deserve to be there. And we talk about how deep wide receiver is and really every single stage of the draft. The top of the running back position is very, very competitive. And Derrick Henry, he certainly is there. But you look at Christian McCaffrey, you look at Dalvin Cook, Aaron Jones, Austin Ekeler, I think, should be in that group. Ezekiel Elliott with a fully healthy Dak Prescott back on the field. I just think that there is room for a guy who has zero role in his team's passing game to not be a top 5 running back. Derrick Henry needs to do exactly what he's done as a runner and a runner only to be in the top 5. Can he do it? He's done it a couple of years in a row. Of course he can do it, but I think that this is the year that things don't quite work out for him and you get a couple of other guys staying healthy. So give me all those guys. Give me McCaffrey over him. Give me Dalvin Cook over him. Give me Aaron Jones over him. Give me Alvin Kamara over him. Give me Ezekiel Elliott over him and Austin Ekeler. I've got Derrick Henry as the RB7 right now outside the top 5. Is that insane? What do you think, Jake?
I think you're doing too many podcasts today already because you're stir crazy over here. The only way Derrick Henry doesn't finish top 5 is if he gets hurt, and it's not going to be worn down hurt. It's going to be freak injury hurt because he's not a normal running back. He's not a normal human. So I have zero concerns for everybody that talks about the workload. It's only been 2 years in a row because people forget for the first 2 years he wasn't even used like this. So I will go complete opposite and just you can make this one of the – I'm sure if you're marked it down already and I listed this is too bold, so it's like I'll give you odds. I'd even give you 2-1 odds that he still finishes inside the top 5.
Well, I think man, what you said is – everybody stays healthy and you get like McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott and Aaron Jones and are all catching 50 to 70 passes and Austin Ekeler gets to 80 and he stays healthy and Derrick Henry, instead of 2,000 rushing yards, has 1,500 and he catches 19 passes again and does nothing with them. And instead of 17 touchdowns, it's 12. Like maybe he ends up, you know, RB6. Or RB7, yeah. You know, but that would, yeah. It would take a stars aligning kind of situation with the running backs, you know, that we're talking about.
Just to that point, the last 2 years, because I had this conversation, I already knew this one because we had this whole conversation on another thing where people were pushing back on the Derrick Henry being top 5, even PPR. The last 2 years in points per game, he was RB4 and RB3 in full PPR, even with the how little he receives passes. So that's my point.
Do you think we'll see like some Darrington Evans? Like, is there going to be a second running back that plays any kind of a role? The thing about Derrick Henry, and I always say, is like, does he need the rest? He's never hurt.
The backup running back Titans guy is in the top 5 of people trying to make things happen. Like Kristen Michael, Chris Herndon, the backup to Derrick Henry. Like these are all in the same. Like that, all these people are in the same conversation.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys. I'm there. I think that the total lack of a role in the passing game is what pushes him out of the top. I'm not saying that Derrick Henry's going to suck. I'm obviously never predicting an injury for a player because how could we do that? I just think that all these guys who do have major passing game roles are going to stay healthy and be better than him. Just be a little bit more productive and we're going to see an incredibly top-heavy year at the running back position. So that's where I go. Derrick Henry, not quite a top 5 running back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, guys, let's move things over to the quarterback position. These are guys we've talked about a little bit this season, but now we're going to codify our thoughts about them into predictions. And let's start with you, Brandon. We've let Jake go first a couple of times here. So you're going a little negative here with Kyler Murray. What do you got for us?
I have that he is going to finish under 600 rushing yards, and he was over 800 last year, and he gets the extra game this year. As a rookie, he was in the 500 range. I just think taking his comments, listening to him talk about it, and reading other quotes about it, he was not happy with how much he ran last year, and obviously he paid a little bit of a price for it and wasn't the same quarterback down the stretch because he was injured. But he, you know, some quarterbacks say it and it sounds like lip service, and you know they're still going to run. I actually think Kyler Murray was not happy with the fact that so much of that offense relied on him having to do his video game stuff, you know, out of the pocket. And, you know, they went and they got Rondale Moore. They went and they got A.J. Green. They double-barreled the backfield, James Conner and Chase Edmonds. I think they plan on utilizing a lot more of the surrounding talent this year. It's not just going to be Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins this year. And I just think it's going to impact his rushing upside significantly because I think the quarterback's motivated to make that happen.
Man, you guys, with your negative takes, are just reaching with these negative takes. Derrick Henry, here's the thing. 100 rush attempts gets him 600 yards. That's the thing. Like, I can't. I just get 100 rush attempts in 17 games gets him 600 yards. And that's the thing. It's 5.8 and 6.2 is 2 yards in the league. So average out to six. Yeah, somewhere around there. If you would have said like 700 after just running for eight and change, I would have been like,
I gotta be bold.
That's not bold enough.
Yeah, I can't get behind this one. I see the argument for it. I definitely see where you're coming from and the rationale behind it, but I can't get on board with the 600.
Well, I'm just saying because he had a rookie season where he played a full season and had 500 yards. And so I'm kind of saying, well, he's going to be more than that, but he's not going to be. I think we've seen his high watermark in the NFL at 800.
It was his rookie season. It was like, what was it, 550? He barely fell short, too, and now he's got the extra game. I can't do it.
This is perfect. This is what we're
If he survives to play the extra game, yeah. Mm.
No. You don't get to throw the caveat out there. Under 600 yards, he plays three games.
No, I told you. I'm factoring in injury risk as well. I think he's one of the higher injury risk quarterbacks in the league because of the way he plays.
We're doing this right because if we're saying bold but believable, it should be, I see the argument, but right. I think you're an idiot.
Right.
I mean, that's what bold, that's how
I mean,
you do.
That's pretty much my life.
So I see the argument.
That's going to be my t-shirt. I see your argument, but yeah. You're an idiot. I should have worn my one from Rick and Morty that says I'm not arguing, I'm just telling you why I'm right. I should have worn that t-shirt today.
That would have been perfect, actually, for this show. I see your argument, Jake, for Jalen Hurts as a top five QB. Tell us why you're not an idiot.
Because unlike Brandon's concern, he is running. He's not going to stop running because that is, and you know, unlike Kyler Murray, he hasn't even talked about wanting to run less because that's just who he is. Kyler Murray's rushing upside is Jalen Hurts and then some. So I think Jalen Hurts could actually get close to being a nine. If he really just runs to his heart's content, I mean, we could be talking about 1,000 rushing yards. But let's even just give him the 800 for Kyler Murray. That's why I was going back to that. 800 by Kyler Murray. I've said this time and again. You take Daniel Jones' miserable season last year, more interceptions than like most of the league, and even the fact that he didn't finish the season. No passing yards, didn't even throw for 3,000 passing yards, didn't even throw for 15 touchdowns. Terrible passing season. You give him 800 yards and 7 rushing touchdowns, he's QB10. So if Jalen Hurts can just throw for 3,200 yards and 22 touchdowns-ish, and he runs for 800 yards and 7 touchdowns, he's top 5. That's just how fantasy works.
I think the boldest thing you just said there was the passing numbers for Hurts.
3,222? That's nothing.
Oh, I don't know. I I would probably bet the under on the 22. The 3,200, that's maybe. Again, I don't – we'll see. I'm not a huge Jalen Hurts fan, but I understand the whole – how the whole rushing –
22 touchdowns, under on 22. That's a bold prediction right there. Under 22 touchdowns? Well, you should slap that on the list.
All right. There you go.
Yeah, one and 1.2 touchdowns per game.
Yeah.
Right? That would be that would go over. That would go over. It would be like 1.1.
We don't like flat numbers, though. Give me 22.5 and I'll take the under. We can't go flat number there.
Yeah. No, there's no fun without a hook. You got to have that in there. Guys, we've talked about Joe Burrow, I think, on maybe every single episode of this show this summer. So why make this one any different? Give me Joe Burrow 5,300 yards. Now, 5,300 maybe seems a little bit strange, but there's a 17th game this season, right? So, this is the 5,000 yard pace over 16 games extrapolated to 17 games. So, basically, what I'm saying is he's going to play at that 5,000 yard pace that we just know in our heads innately, but then we're going to add the 17th game so he gets to 5,300 yards. We've made the case time and time and time again. This team has a bad defense. Joe Burrow is great. They want to throw the ball. Three great receivers. Joe Mixon more involved in the passing game. Add it all up. Joe Burrow's going to have a monster statistical season. Give me 5,300 passing yards, and he leads the league in passing yards also, which plus 2,000 with our partners at BetMGM. So if you want to get some nice juicy 20-1 odds to have something to cheer for all season, Joe Burrow leading the league in passing yards, can it do it? I know that we're all basically on board with this in general. We all like Joe Burrow. We all have Joe Burrow in our respective flex leagues. It was the one guy who we all shared in those flex leagues. So Joe Burrow is basically the representative player of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. If he has a good season, all three of us are going to end up feeling pretty good about that. And if he has a good season, if he has the season we're expecting, Tyler Boyd's probably going to have something to do with that in a big way. And Brandon, you've got a bold prediction saying that Tyler Boyd's maybe going to have a bigger role in it than a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, I actually have him as my bold prediction leading this team in receptions and receiving yards. And I feel like what's going to end up happening is the attention on the outside with Higgins and Chase is going to end up giving Tyler Boyd ownership of the middle of the field, where it will be right in Joe Burrow's wheelhouse. We've seen Tyler Boyd and Joe Burrow work really well together already. And I just think it's bold. I mean, I think you could cut this receiving core three different ways, but if I'm the way I'm at right now is like, yeah, I'm still putting my money on T. Higgins as the best fantasy value, but I'm having a really hard time not wanting to take Tyler Boyd over Ja'Marr Chase in drafts. So that's kind of where I'm at. Do I 100% believe this?
No,
but do I think it's possible? Yes, I absolutely do. I wouldn't bat one eyelash if this came true.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. I was doing like that whole gif with the guy sitting there that looking at the computer that makes the weird face like, what am I looking at? And then, oh, I can see it. No, maybe I can't. Because it wasn't even that. It was the fact that you've been such the T. Higgins stan, so to speak.
Yeah.
For that, I was surprised that it was the Tyler Boyd. And that's why I was like, oh, well, Brandon's going with Tyler Boyd now? What's going on?
But yeah, no, I didn't throw in touchdowns either. And if I'm doing this, I'm saying T. Higgins is close. And then the touchdowns swing it to his way and all that.
And so. I'm with you. I think we've talked about this a lot on the show with Joe Burrow, is the fact that I could see all three of them being what we just saw with the Panthers. You know, nothing else, it could be like somebody starts the season hot, then disappears while it's somebody else, and then the roller coaster of the ride is Ja'Marr Chase or something like that. But yeah,
I think the point is that Boyd's the value here in terms of in the draft, right? Where you're having to kind of take Higgins and Chase.
I don't know.
Where
Chase is all of a sudden going in the 30s now because everybody's just watching. He's dropping.
He had the lead balloon effect, the reverse helium going on. Yep. Drops and not gaining separation. Just
I know
those
you guys kind of ignored my dad joke there, so that we can continue.
I totally missed it.
I said he's dropping in ADP. I paused.
Yeah.
It's a little too literal, though. You have to more like David Caruso CSI emphasize the dropping.
Yeah, you got
to
be like, he's dropping.
Are way over there.
He's dropping in ADP.
Put it on. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to another wide receiver prediction, and we're going to get you guys going at one another, because a little earlier in the show, Brandon said he just wants nothing to do with the Las Vegas receiver group. Jake, you want very much something to do with at least one of those Las Vegas receivers. Tell us who, tell us why.
Are we skipping my fourth ball prediction, or are we coming back around to it?
I don't know what order you sent them to me, but I promise you we're getting them all.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure we get to that. The Henry Ruggs is a top 25 wide receiver. Again, bold. This is super bold. But what it really comes down to is something, if anybody's listened to past podcasts on this very network, like this is not going to be, I'm going to be repeating myself, so you can just fast forward for about a minute and just come back. But it comes down to Henry Ruggs, as a talent coming out of college, was there. This is why the Raiders took him when they did. There was arguments at the time whether or not he should be the first, second, third, fourth wide receiver in that draft class. Obviously, hindsight, everybody's like, oh, they should have taken Justin Jefferson. And about the point being is there's a reason that people saw the talent. And part of the reason that the Raiders took him, And I'm not saying this to be like, ha ha, I actually mocked them to take Ruggs because of the fit, because of what they were looking for outside versus inside versus like that Tyreek Hill role. And that's what surprised some people. And I'm not saying he's Tyreek Hill, but that's the role he fills. He was pushed outside because Edwards got hurt and Nelson Aguilar became a thing and took his job in the slot role, somewhat playing outside. And he wasn't ready for that, period. He wasn't ready to be a number one, period. A lot of rookie wide receivers are not ready to be the number ones in the NFL with the defensive attention that comes with it, period. So Edwards wasn't ready. As Brandon, like the Edwards wasn't ready for that either. He was raw. Now both of them are looking so good, and deservedly so, because they are both great talents, that John Brown became expendable, asked for his release, and they granted it because he wasn't even going to be on the top unit. And Henry Ruggs, with that big playability, and you just get a few of those throws that Derek Carr missed last year, and they get on the same page that they weren't as a rookie, which is understandable. That's why when you have no preseason and you have no time together and you can't get on the same page to learn your timing and you hit some of those deep balls, Henry Ruggs, top 25 is, what do we say here? 70 catches, 1,100 yards, and 6 touchdowns gets him there, and I think that's doable.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders have been bottom three in wide receiver catches each of the last 2 years.
Wide receivers. That's the
thing. I know. I can buy into Ruggs a little bit
Henry
more.
Henry Ruggs and Brian Edwards last year?
Yeah, and Nelson Aguilar. Don't forget about him. Got himself a nice contract with 40-some catches. But, I can buy into Ruggs because they're going to use him differently. And because Gruden's motivated to not have, you know, egg on his face for the high draft pick of Ruggs. I mean, the other receivers in that class have been showing out, and Ruggs hasn't done anything. So I think they are motivated.
That's a good point. If out of the coaches in the NFL, of you put a top five list of people that don't want to be proven wrong.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's why I can buy into Ruggs more than Edwards. But, I was going to have my bold prediction, and I said it's going to be Kenyon Drake getting 60 catches, but I was going to say Kenyon Drake is the number two receiver on the team behind Darren Waller. So, I can get down with Ruggs being much better than he was last year.
Does that mean you're drafting Ruggs? I mean, at ADP, if you think he can be much better, the ADP is very affordable.
It's dirt cheap.
Is it still? Because I feel like it's starting to move up.
I think so.
This past week, he's in a normal league, still in that almost undrafted range.
I think he's a great, great last one or two, the last couple rounds of your draft flyer. I think he's great. Because there's upside.
I've got
there.
A couple of different ADP sources pulled up. I've got the NFFC. Obviously, we know that's different, but I just wanted something that was easy to select, recent dates. And so since August 24th, he's actually up to 126 overall in ADP in those leagues. That has him sandwiched in between Justin Fields and Jonnu Smith. Obviously, that's a different group of people who are drafting in those leagues by the Joe Public ADP. And again, we can't really we can't narrow this down to recent dates, but you have him at 132 overall, wide receiver 52.
Yeah, I'm probably, I mean, if I'm looking at my ranks, I think I'm like mid to late 50s at the wide receiver spot, so I might be a hair below ADP.
You know, if you're really into numerology, the fact that he's wide receiver 52 by ADP and Jake has him as a top 25 wide receiver maybe is a sign.
You're saying Jake's got it backwards?
That's exactly what he's talking about. I've actually got Henry Ruggs as wide receiver 44, so there you go.
Yeah, which has to put you higher than most at 44.
It's actually 12 an 8 over ADP to do the quick numerology math there for you.
We need a numerology metric somewhere in the fantasy football world.
I mean, the 12 over consensus has the 2 in there, so there you go.
I am 55. I just looked it up. So
there's more fives in there. Everybody go play a pick 4 with 2s and 5s. There you go. I do not promote gambling.
let me see where I am on Henry in that way. Come on. Here we go. Rugs, I'm actually the lowest out of us. I'm at wide receiver 59 on him right now. So I'm with Brandon. Just where like I know Waller's going to do a ton in that passing game, and then I don't know if I even want to bother trying to figure out what the rest of that passing
There's
game
still
is.
3,000 yards.
I know, but I'm just, it's one of those situations where like, do I want to fight through figuring this out when there are so many?
The answer is right in front of you.
The answer should be self-evident, Jake is saying, with Henry Ruggs as the top 25 wide receiver, bold prediction. Look, you know, one wide receiver group that I do feel the answer is self-evident is the one that's in Chicago. Allen Robinson, very, very, very clearly the number one. Darnell Mooney, very, very, very clearly the number two. And I think that that status for those two guys and the fact that there's not a ton else in the passing game means that this can be a top five wide receiver duo this season. I'm talking fantasy production, half PPR leagues, Allen Robinson plus Darnell Mooney, a top five wide receiver duo. And when you just hear that, maybe you think, it's not so bold. You're not saying they're the number one or the top three, but think about the Dallas guys. Think about the Seattle guys. Think about the Cincinnati guys. Think about, Tampa,
Minnesota.
Right?
I mean,
right there, it seems like, there are a lot of good wide receiver duos in this league. So, exactly. Boom, we're doing it right there. There's six
Rams.
Right there off the bat. So to
Minnesota.
Punch into the Rams, there's seven. Right? To punch into the top, I feel like we said Minnesota three times now.
Yeah.
But to punch into the top five, you could say
Tampa Bay,
right,
and Carolina.
Calvin Ridley plus, did say Tampa Bay. So Carolina makes an 8th. Right, and then you could say like Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman.
Do we include tight ends as receiver duos? Because
I am not including tight ends as receiver duos, but of course, then you can get crazy. But no, I'm not trying to fight against Tyreek and Travis Kelce or even Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts maybe. But anyways, I think with the way that these two guys are just going to own the pet, like these two guys, this could be like a Minnesota situation where it's the two top receivers and then like scraps for everyone else in the passing game. I think it could be like that. And the argument for Allen Robinson, self-evident. We know exactly what Allen Robinson is. With Darnell Mooney, last year, I've made this point with him a couple of times, but just to reiterate it, you're talking about a guy who came in as a rookie, no OTAs, no minicamp, no real training camp, no exhibition season. First time he plays a real NFL game is a literal real NFL game in week one. He's got Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles as his quarterbacks, arguably the worst quarterback situation in the league and certainly a bottom three quarterback situation in the league. We've all seen the highlights of him getting wide open, him blowing guys off the line and balls sailing over his head, balls missing him 5 yards to the left or the right. And he still gave you 61, 631, and 4 touchdowns. And he did that with all of those things working against him. So if you give this team better quarterback play, which they are certainly going to have, you give them a better offensive line, which they are not certainly going to have, but it's a low bar to clear from what the team had last season, and you give them complete or as close to literal complete ownership of a passing game as two pass catchers can have, I think we could see them get their way into the top five. So I think we see a monster top five brand of season from Allen Robinson. And I think a best case scenario for Darnell Mooney has him in that low end wide receiver two group. The thing that obviously works against this is what's the volume of the Bears passing game as a total. That's obviously works against this here.
For this to happen, when does Andy Dalton have to not be the starter anymore?
Week two. Week
two. Week two.
Week two.
Week two. Week two.
And you know what I love about Darnell Mooney? The thing I love about Darnell Mooney is he has all the excuses there that a Bryan Edwards could have, yet he doesn't need those excuses because he went out and he just was productive. So, like, I love that about Mooney, and that's why I'm kind of just, like, buying in on him. He gets all the hyperbole that Bryan Edwards does, but he actually went out on the field, didn't need the excuses, went out and was productive, and no one was expecting it.
This is bold and believable for me for sure. And I think that the nice thing about this one is that even if they fall short, and I think that the Bears passing volume is definitely the big mark against this one happening. this is going to lead you to a good draft process, because if you have Allen Robinson at cost or you have Darnell Mooney at cost, you're going to be very happy. And I would even say, especially for Robinson, if you reach a little bit above ADP, you are going to be very happy with the player that you get. Jake, you want to chime in on this at all?
No, you're going to love the shirt that I'm getting put together, if I could get it finished.
Oh.
I'm having somebody help me make a t-shirt related to Darnell Mooney, so you'll love that. Oh, that's a hint. That's a preview for when that happens.
Do I get it for free?
No, I'm not. I'm paying to make it myself. I'm not selling. I'm not going to buy you an extra. If you want to give me money, I'll get a second one from the company.
Oh, I thought this was like a RotoWare situation, and you were hooking us up with some like
no RotoWare legitimately can't do it, because RotoWare can't do anything NFL wise because the NFL comes after him hardcore. Even when he did the Spider-Man pointing at each other without even names on the jerseys, and it was like it's cartoon, so it was like he even got a cease and desist for that.
yeah, it's the MLB that they've got the full licensing for. But anyway, I'm excited to see this Mooney shirt.
Not maybe friendly
I'll,
league.
Maybe I'll. Yeah, exactly. Maybe I'll just have to copy you or ask you to double it up for me. But give me Robinson and Mooney as a top five wide receiver duo. All right, guys, one more prediction apiece. This is the one that sort of nothing really fit together all that well. But the fact is, these are big name players that we're all getting into. So, Jake, this is the one that you were talking about, your fourth prediction, I suppose. It's Najee Harris, top five running back. Let's hear it.
Volume is king. How many times do you have to say volume is king? But let's also talk about Najee Harris, the talent. Talent is also king, especially when it comes to running backs and being able to take situations over. I mean, this is why we're talking about Javonte Williams potentially already having the lead with Denver, and that's why a lot of people are on board with stashing Michael Carter. And young, talented running backs are the easiest path to take over their position, let alone somebody who's drafted in the first round, let alone somebody's going to a team who loves one running back only. Anthony McFarland just got put on the IR, which at least the first three games, and it's a mysterious injury. So you're going to tell me that we're worried about Kalen Ballage and Benny Snell? No, because we're talking about Najee Harris versus those guys is one of the biggest talent gaps of any running back backfield in the NFL. We're talking about somebody who is probably going to be top five or should be top five, along with Christian McCaffrey, Zeke, and others that are that 80% of the time on the field, if not 90% for Harris. And then what does it come down to? Most of the time, if you score double-digit touchdowns, you're inside the top 10. Most of the time, also inside the top 5. Aaron Jones, the past 2 years, if you just look at him, if you go back to the argument that you guys are making for Aaron Jones, he's been in the top 5 for the past 2 years. He only ran for 9 touchdowns last year, and Harris is a good pass catcher. So 300-plus touches, double-digit touchdowns, workload galore, talent situation, opportunity, it all comes into play, and Najee Harris being in the top 5 would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, I think this is your least bold, prediction of all. I mean, you're talking about it. Volume is going to be so massive that
less bold than Hurts? You didn't want to give Hurts 22 touchdowns.
Exactly. No, I just think you're right. I mean, anybody that's getting that kind of volume has got a really good puncher's chance of getting into the top 5. There's just no doubt about it.
Yeah, and we know he's going to get that. And I think that I was beating the drum on the offensive line concerns a little earlier in the summer. And even now, after sort of thinking about it a little bit deeper, those are real, but probably a tiny bit overstated if the volume is going to be there in the way that we are 99.9% certain it is going to be.
Well, just look at last year. David Montgomery and James Robinson, both top 10 running backs on terrible offensive lines.
Yep, exactly. So a little bit overstated. They're real, but they're not going to totally submarine a season, especially when Najee Harris is going to get the volume that he is going to get. I'm going to go next, Brandon, because I've got a running back also, and then you can wrap us up. Give me Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 1,500-plus yards from scrimmage. I mean, he got to 1,100 last year, and everyone wants to count it as a disappointing season. As we've said multiple times on this show, it was disappointing relative to his ADP after Damian Williams dropped out of last year, but not disappointing actually. He was a very productive guy, and as Jake has made the point many times, before Le'Veon Bell got there, someone who was playing like an RB1 at a production level. So I think this year, Darrell Williams, I'm not really concerned about that type of competition. I think he takes over that backfield in a way that they didn't necessarily let him do last year, and is very clearly the 1-2-3 with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in this offense. So I think we could easily be looking at a season of something like 1,200 rushing yards and 300 receiving yards. Give me that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 1,500 plus yards from scrimmage this season, a guy who is ending up on a lot of my teams because you're paying still that high-end RB2 price for a guy who I think is going to be an RB1 and controlling a backfield on what is maybe the best offense in the league. What do you guys say about this one? What do you got on this, Jake?
To steal from Brandon, this is your least bold prediction that you've made yet tonight. So there you go.
There we go. I like it a bit. Brandon, finish us off here. What's your last bold prediction on this episode?
I think it's Matt Stafford kind of doing Joe Burrow things with 5,000 plus yards. Look at Jared Goff. At his best in this offense was 4,600 yards. You get an extra game. You get a golden-armed Matt Stafford, a guy that Sean McVay went out and got, and they couldn't get rid of Jared Goff fast enough. You know, a lot of it, you heard a lot about how it was kind of like McVay puppet mastering Jared Goff, and a lot of the narrative now is that Matt Stafford can come to the line of scrimmage and he doesn't need that tutoring and that hand holding that Jared Goff needs. So I think the backfield with Cam Akers going down is probably leaning them into a little bit more volume as well overall. And that's kind of now the clear strength of the offense. So yeah, as this is basically a 300 yards per game pace, and I think he can hit that. So I'm with you. I mean, I think Stafford's going to join Burrow in the 5,000 yard club, and we might get another quarterback or two if they stay healthy in that mix as well.
Well, there's your theme, Mike. Maybe the theme is that nobody had a bold prediction to finish the show. So there you go. It's our least bold predictions combined. There you go.
Least bold predictions combined. Do this for us, Jake. Take this 5,000 yards and translate that into Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp production for us off the top of your head.
I mean, really, it's not that much further. That's why, so at least I have 4,700 yards for Stafford. So you add 300 yards, it's not even going to do much for Kupp and Woods. It would just bump them into two or three more spots up the wide receiver ranks. And I already have both of them as top 20 wide receivers. So
Can I throw something out? Because I get this little voice deep in my sub. No, DeSean Jackson. Like, what if DeSean Jackson plays 14 or 15 games? What if? Let's play the what if.
I'll give you the what if. What if you could predict the five good games you get in those 15 games?
No, I know, but like, is he even going in best balls? Because that's where he belongs.
Oh,
obviously.
My God. Everybody's good in best ball. But no, I know. In best ball, sure. I've actually taken him in best ball for that reason. If he stays healthy, it's because then you don't have to predict the five good games. But hey, DFS, there you go. DFS and best ball, DeSean Jackson for life. No, really what it comes down to is if he throws for 5,000 yards. This wasn't even on my list of bold predictions because I didn't feel like it was this bold, but this makes my bold prediction of Tyler Higbee, a top 10 tight end, a lock if he's thrown for 5,000 yards.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. He's got to get in more involved for sure, and just reason to buy that Rams offense and a lot of reason to buy that Rams passing game. Sean McVay teaming up with Matthew Stafford. Another one that you would love to find investment in. Another one that maybe finishes behind Darlon Robinson plus Darnell Mooney, getting them into the top five. And that... That, my friends, is how we end. And I was, you know what? Actually, here's how we're going to end the show. Brandon's got like the best shirt on that we've seen all season on the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. And I saw it right when he was signed on. And I wanted to say something. But then I thought, no, I'm going to find a way to weave it into the show. But I didn't. So I'll just leave us by saying there's always money in the banana stand. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Season begins next week. Next Monday, when the three of us are back with you, we will have still a little bit more of a preseason feel to the show, but that'll be the last one. Next Thursday, when the three of us are back on Thursday once again, that is going to be week one ranking. So get excited. For Jake, for Brandon, I am Michael Beller. We are back with you on Monday, the three of us. This show returns on Friday. Me, Vic Tafer, and Zach Jackson talking some more NFL futures. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend. Can't wait for the season to begin.